Before we get into the podcast tonight, celebrating our back-to-back Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, we did want to acknowledge the tragedy that unfolded at Union Station on Wednesday. As many of you know, Taylor and I did attend the rally and were unfortunately very close to the shots that were fired, saw and heard things that we never expected or wanted to see. And our hearts go out to everybody that was physically affected by everything that happened, and a million of our closest friends that were there with us to celebrate the Chiefs that, unfortunately, because of the country that we live in and the values, if I can call them that, that people in this country value over human life, places in a situation where what should have been an amazing day that we remember for the rest of our lives for all the right reasons is unfortunately always going to be tainted by something horrible that happened. And I just want to say thanks to everybody that listens to the podcast and reached out. And I don't want to make this about us because we're fine. But as Taylor Swift would say, we may be okay, but we're not fine at all. It was a really tough and scary situation. And it sucks. It sucks that we have to talk about this before we get into the podcast, which we will bring you an entertaining, fun podcast. Go ahead and skip forward. You know, if this doesn't resonate with you, that's fine. Go ahead and skip a couple of minutes ahead. We are going to talk about football. We are going to celebrate the Chiefs, but we just had to spend a couple of minutes acknowledging what happened and just say that I feel for everybody that was affected by this. I'm angry and upset that this had to happen, and it didn't have to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you on everything you said. Obviously, you don't really go through a day like that and then get on a microphone to talk about that team without being able to do this part. I mean, you just, it was surreal and sad, and I kept kind of being surprised at how not surprised I was.
Sure. At
throughout the whole event. I mean, as soon as I saw a muzzle flash, I saw a body hit the ground. I saw, I mean, you know, right there within 100 feet of it. And it was not this like overwhelming panicking about like, what do I do? Why would that happen? Why, you know, there was no questioning. It was, oh, that's, you know, that's the reality we live in. And this is what I need to do from here on out. And I mean, that sucks. That sucks that we are desensitized in a way to those types of events. I am fine. I'm more fine than I would have expected to be if you had told me that that was going to happen to me. And that's why you said, you know, this isn't about you and I. This is about Kansas City. This is about America. This is about a loving mother, Lisa Lopez Galvin, who lost her life, and all those kids that were fighting for their lives in Children's Mercy and scarred and horrified. And this is a mourning of future events that everyone involved or anyone watching this on TV or anyone that saw the news is now going to think about. And I'm pissed off more than I am sad. I think that it's beyond silly that we allow ourselves to get into this situation over and over again, and then everyone just kind of hems and haws and then go back to normal. This is going to happen again. This is going to happen again. That is not a morbid thing to say. It's just the absolute truth. And that sucks. But with that being said, you know, we're going to do what we love to do. We're going to talk about football. It's the way that football is usually an escape from crap like this. And we're going to allow that to continue to be the case. But before we do that, the opening to our podcast is the Always Sunny music is ironically cheery for what it actually is, represents. But in this case, it just doesn't make sense to play our intro music after talking about this. So we're just going to have a moment of silence for not only Lisa Lopez Galvin, but for all the innocents lost on Wednesday. And our thoughts and prayers are with anybody who has been having trouble with this. The Chiefs have set up Casey Strong for, you know, resources to reach out to for getting help with this if you need it. Please don't be afraid to do that if you need anything here. And we'll just do a little moment of silence and then we're going to start with the show.
Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky at Bird Law Expert. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor _ Witt on Twitter /X, on Blue Sky at Taylor M. Witt. What is going on, buddy?
A little roller coaster of emotions. Obviously, very excited to talk about the Chiefs with you. It's our favorite thing to do throughout the week. Sucks that we had to say what we had to say, but we are moving forward.
We have the pleasure of concluding our playoff correspondence with the Ringers, Randy Gisarli, tonight. But that doesn't mean that our Super Bowl coverage will be over. If you are new to the program, we will milk this thing for all it's worth. We'll be talking about this for months and years to come, and that will take the form next week of our traditional recap show. We will give you the Chief system. We will give you our signature awards, the five-star men, the trash men, the wild cards. We're going to talk about all of that between me and Taylor next week.
Joining us for the 11th and final time during the 2023 NFL season, a man that needs no introduction, but I am happy to provide one anyway. Outside of his brilliant baseball work that Austin and I consume throughout our entire Royals fandom over at RannyOnTheRoyals.com, go check it out still, he has been responsible for the greatest sports journalism chronicling of the Mahomes era on the entire internet. That is correct. Via his yearly tributes to The Ringer and is our honored guest to geek out about the Chiefs during their yearly run through the playoffs. He is, of course, Randy Gisarli. Randy, Austin and I already got through our recap of the shitty ending to the great celebration that was this week. Before we get into our normal fun conversation about football, just wondering if you have any thoughts you wanted to share about the awful events that happened on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, first off, I just wanted to make sure that the two of you are doing well.
Thank you.
You know, physically, thank emotionally, you, I know we you were there, and like so many people in Kansas City, this is not a this is not something you read about in the paper or saw on Twitter.
Right.
You were there and experienced it live. So I'm glad to know you guys are doing well. Hopefully everyone listening, recovered from that. And if not, please, do not hesitate to seek professional help. There's absolutely nothing wrong with acknowledging the trauma of such an event, even if you weren't, affected directly. That is not easy for anyone to go through. So,
well said.
And I don't want to, I wasn't there. I was, at work in Chicago. I had the parade on my computer. Ducking in and out between patients to enjoy the debauchery that was going on, and Travis Kelce being one of the drunkest people I've ever seen. Certainly in a public arena. Yeah. and in just sort of enjoying the ridiculousness of the day, and then within minutes of the telecast going out, I guess perhaps thankfully that it was not broadcast live, at least on NFL Network on national TV, hearing the news. So I have no right to claim any kind of expertise on what happened, or that to act like I was affected anyway, like the people of Kansas City were directly. But I just want to speak on a more general subject, because anytime something like this happens, it's so difficult to talk about issues of gun violence without somehow veering into what people consider to be a political discussion. But it's also impossible to talk about, it's also impossible to address this issue, to try to keep people safe from random gun violence without talking about guns.
Yep.
And the one thing I want to say is, the one thing that I think is a fact which cannot be argued. We're all entitled to our own opinions. We're not entitled to our own facts. And the fact is, this issue is an almost uniquely American issue.
Yes.
It is not something that happens in other countries. It happens exceedingly rarely outside of the United States. And when it does, laws are changed to make sure it never happens again. Australia, which when I think of a country that culturally is maybe most similar to, sort of has the most similar ethos to the individualistic culture that we have here in America, Australia may be at the top of that list. They very much have the same kind of historical vibe, the way that the country was settled, the way that the culture of the people there. They had a mass killing incident in the 1990s, and they changed their laws and they restricted guns heavily, and they have not had a mass killing anywhere in the country since. New Zealand had an absolutely awful mass murder where actually an Australian citizen flew to New Zealand, bought a bunch of guns, and murdered, I want to say, 56 people at the local mosque in Christchurch, New Zealand. And they changed their laws to make it next to impossible to purchase guns of that nature. And they have not had a similar incident since. And pretty much every country in the Western world has avoided this issue. And the reason I bring this up is because anytime we talk about how do we prevent this from happening again? I see comments on my Twitter feed. I'm sure you guys have seen your own comments, that people who want to blame other issues, and certainly there are other factors. Obviously, not everybody with a gun is using it to kill people. But when I see things like, well, this is a problem of crime, crime prevention, and we need to lock up criminals for a longer period of time. Do you think that they don't? Do you think that they lock up criminals for a longer period of time in Europe or in Australia or New Zealand? Is Norway a place where they put people in jail for life for minor offenses? Like, when you
They don't
talk
even
about, oh,
put people in jail for life for major offenses.
Exactly. No,
no.
Exactly. That's my
You're
point. I
talking
get the
like
opposite.
15 years for murder in Norway.
Exactly. I think it's 21 years is by law, actually, in Norway, 21 years is the maximum sentence you can get for mass murder, which actually, I know this because of the worst mass murders, the white
Right.
supremacist Anders Breivik in Norway. It's a 21-year sentence. But that was an event almost without precedent in Norwegian history before since. Or I'll see people argue that it's just a matter of we're not teaching our children, proper behavior. This is a cultural issue. It's almost like people want to throw American culture under the bus in
Sure.
order to avoid acknowledging the difference between America and other Western countries. Because are you saying that they don't have a problem with broken homes and latchkey children in other countries around the world? Like, every problem that you want to blame it on exists in other countries. I
Certainly.
don't I do I reject the idea that America is as an inferior culture, that we are an inferior people to the other countries. I actually do believe in American exceptionalism on some level, in part because my parents immigrated to this country, and I have witnessed the difference. I believe in the American dream because my parents lived that American dream. So
Sure.
I reject this idea that, oh, we are th this is an American problem because of Americans. It's not because of the
That's
people.
good.
Or people will say, oh, it's not the guns that kill people, it's people who kill people. Well, why do people in other countries not kill people? I just and with the I just want I just I don't even want an answer for me. Like, the people who, if you believe that the problem is something other than the guns themselves, I when I ask this question, I never get an answer. I never get an answer. And you don't have to answer it for me. Don't answer it for myself. I answer it for yourself. That's what I would ask. Just answer it for yourself. But you have to acknowledge that this is a question. And if you can't answer the question for yourself, then you have to ask yourself why. And I'll just leave it at
Let's talk about the Super Bowl.
that. Let's
Randy.
talk happy talk, guys, because the rest of this
Yes.
I think the rest of this podcast will be in a much, much happier state of mind.
And we owe it to ourselves to do that. And obviously, Taylor and I, having been there, and we've already talked about it, so we won't go over it again. It was important to us to get on and do this and talk ball and get back to celebrating what was in so many ways an amazing, unprecedented week for us as fans of the greatest football team in the world, the Kansas City Chiefs. So right off the top, Randy, I'm going to put you on the spot. If you had to rank Super Bowl 54, Super Bowl 57, Super Bowl 58, where does each Super Bowl rank for you as an enjoyer of the Kansas City Chiefs, as a fan?
So to me, there's a pretty clear ranking here, and I suspect it's going to be your ranking. I get the impression that this is the way almost all Chiefs fans are taking this in, which is that, you know, nothing can really surpass the first one, right? Super Bowl 54, the fact that it was the first championship in 50 years for, you know, which means for all of us, the first Chiefs Super Bowl win of our lifetime. And to do it the way they did it, they were down, you know, 10 points. This is before we knew that, you know, a 10-point deficit was just something Patrick Mahomes needed to feel alive.
Yeah, right.
We didn't know, even though it was his third game in a row, which did it, but we did not know that at the time. No. That, you know, this was just going to become a thing for him. But, you know, knowing how close we all felt to, oh, you know, we've made it this far, and it's still not going to be this year. You always remember your first, and that to me is still at the top. But to me, this one is clearly more meaningful, more enjoyable than last year's.
I agree.
I don't think there's really even a doubt. I mean, I will say, and we you know, because we talked after last year's, and even, you know, before this season began, and I think we kind of talked about how our off season went as, you know, defending champions, and it was lovely. It was nice. It was a great feeling for, you know, defending champs, but it sounds so entitled to say this, but let's just acknowledge as Chiefs fans, we are entitled, incredibly entitled, but it was nothing I hadn't already felt.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It was like, we won the Super Bowl. That's
just
awesome.
Business-like. Yeah,
it was, but it was also like, okay, we've won it with, you know, the feeling of winning a Super Bowl. We had, if you think of all teams, you know, a kind of ascending a pyramid of greatness, this was the same level that we had been at after Super Bowl 54, Super Bowl 54, sure. 57. Mm-hmm. This one, though, what we all kind of knew, three is a special number. For whatever reason, we've collectively decided that three championships means dynasty. Mm-hmm. And I think of this pyramid of greatness, three puts you, you've just gone up another level. You've just moved, you've taken the elevator to the next floor up. And this one is that much more special than last year. It feels different because I'm not celebrating in my mind. I'm not celebrating, oh, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. No, I'm celebrating the Chiefs are a dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And people always remember dynasties. Like, mm-hmm. off the top of your head, do you remember who won the Super Bowl in 2009?
The Saints over the Colts.
Was that the Saints one?
I have them all memorized.
I'm impressed.
I was going to guess that it was the Saints, but somewhere in there. But yeah, right.
I can do that with baseball, I think. I don't think I can do it
sure.
with football.
But did the point you see is, the Duke baseball player that could do every World Series? He literally off the top of his memory did 1904 through the current one in like 2 minutes. Like he just rattled them off impressive. 1 second. Anyways, keep going.
Yes, no, exactly. There are people who can do that. The average fan might, you know, struggle to remember. But you know, you said the Saints. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that one, but I couldn't tell you the year. But when I say, you know, who's the dynasty? You know, what team was the dynasty in the 90s? Everybody.
Cowboys.
Calls himself a football fan, those Cowboys.
Yep.
If I say, you know, dynasties, 80s, 49ers.
Niners.
You might say the Washington, you know. On
yeah,
some level,
they had a good run.
Yeah, they had a good run, but it was like a little more spread out. Right? But the Niners are short. 70s. Steelers. Absolutely. Yep. Right? The Raiders, sort of borderline. We don't count them here on this podcast. But,
no,
you
know, no, we don't.
And then, you know, 2000s, Patriots. The point is 60s, Packers. You just immediately comes to mind. When you talk about the 2020s, 50 years from now, I mean, Chiefs. Mm-hmm.
Chiefs own it.
No one.
I mean, someone would have to rip off the next five for it to not be the Chiefs. Like they, you know, it's
and even then, it would be two separate dynasties.
Yeah, that's right.
They still get the first part. The Steelers and Raiders kind of both.
It'd be like the Niners and Cowboys, right? Like one on the back of the other, right?
Exactly. And I mean, it's kind of ironic. It really is on the back of the Patriots. Like literally, the two most successful 5-year stretches in NFL history were back to back. And those teams met, like, literally the Packers are only where they are because they beat the Chiefs in that first championship game. But it was a passing of the torch that occurred sort of after the season, not in the middle of the game as we would have liked. But the point is, the Chiefs have achieved a level of immortality that they didn't have before. We always talk about how flags fly forever, and that's absolutely true. And the 2015 Royals, the flag will fly forever. But there is a dynasty level flag that truly will be not just fly forever. You doesn't have to fly for people to remember. This one will be in people's memories forever.
That's
And
a great point.
the Chiefs are at that level now. And what's so exciting, of course, is that there are, even among dynasties, I feel like there are levels as well. And like the point is that the Chiefs are now they've been admitted into the dynasty suite, in the dynasty club. We talked about the gated community within the gated community, right? Well, within the gated community, within the gated community, I feel like there may be another gated community. And for that, you don't even like, you kind of almost have to stop looking at football and start looking at sports as a whole, right? Like, there is the team has, already made it very clear how much that three-peat, matters.
Matters.
And I was so thrilled because, I sent out the distracted boyfriend meme on Twitter. Like, within minutes, I had it all lined up. The distracted boyfriend looking away from Dynasty and looking straight at three-peat. But like, within 20 minutes, they were on the championship podium, and both Patrick and Travis made it, were explicitly said that third championship, the chance to do something no NFL team has ever done, win three Super Bowls in a row, was absolutely like a massive motivation for them. And if they get to that point, like, now we're talking about, do we, you start ranking them with the Bulls of the 90s, with, I mean, at some point there's going to be a lot longer, but like, are the Celtics of the 60s, are they, like, Patrick Mahomes is going to be around for a while, guys, we hope.
50s Yankees. I mean,
50,
all
I
the
mean, the
greatest.
Yankees. Yeah, exactly. You're looking at other sports though now. Like, at some point, football does not, there is a point. We talk about, yes, the Patriots have the unprecedented run of six championships over 19 years, but there was a 10-year interregnum where they did not win a title. And so the Chiefs, at the very least, are in a position where they have a chance to, at the end of this run, be hailed as the greatest NFL, not just an NFL dynasty, the greatest NFL dynasty. It's not going to be easy. I'm not even going to say it's likely, but I think they have opened up a realm of possibility with this championship that even 6 weeks ago, nobody really felt, was something that could happen at certainly this year. So that, to me, that, this championship has been even more gratifying than I think I suspected it might be before the Super Bowl.
I think what it is, Randy, Taylor and I were having a conversation about this the other day. The first one obviously means a lot to us as Chiefs fans, but it didn't really mean anything to the national
Anyone.
football consuming
Sure.
public, right? Like, for us, the first one in our lifetimes, the first one in 50 years for the team that we root for, that's obviously incredibly meaningful to us. But the first one doesn't really mean that much. I mean, one team wins the Super Bowl every year. So a team winning the Super Bowl, for the first time in 50 years isn't incredibly meaningful to the football watching public as a whole.
And
A
Austin,
team
I
winning
even
a
argued
second
to
Super
you
Bowl, right?
that it wasn't even the Chiefs' first Super Bowl as a
Right,
franchise, which
exactly right.
is a notable event. If
Right,
one of these other
exactly.
teams that had
If it had
never
been the
won one
Lions, right,
finally breaks
exactly.
through, we at least kind of acknowledge that as fans. Like, no one else cared that we won our second in franchise
And
history at
people would
all.
remember if the Lions first won in 2023, just like the Cubs first won or won their first one in 100 years, in 2016. People would remember that, but we didn't even have that. So this one, and really even last year, okay, great, you got two, but it's not a dynasty until you get three. So for me, I mean, I think there's an argument that this is the most enjoyable one because now everybody has to sit there and acknowledge our greatness once and for all. And I like that. That is
I
great. Like,
also Randy, one of your superpowers on our show is that you tend to answer our questions before we ask them. Austin can attest to this. We will side chat and be like, literally, this
It
was the next
is
thing I was going to say. It's
unbelievable. We
eerie.
we
So
should document it some just a
I wish
second.
we would, yes. But so the next thing I wanted to talk about was exactly what you just touched on, and a lot about how the emotions have changed, not necessarily which ones were the most enjoyable, but kind of like how we viewed each of these Super Bowl wins as Chiefs fans. And I think your point about they have now entered the ability to join the greatest sports dynasties of all time is something that not a lot of people tend to kind of have the perspective on right away. Like, I know people were fired up that the Chiefs won, obviously, but like, they are on the precipice of doing something that is completely unprecedented in the sport. Three in a row has obviously never been done. Are you thinking about the big picture pretty much at all times? Like, I think some of us, like I am, like everything that the Chiefs accomplish, do you kind of zoom out a little bit?
Yes, I mean, like the entire, like I've moved past like caring about, like we've talked before about like how individual games almost like don't matter. Like we're looking at the arc of the season, and that was, I
Right.
think, a very a very useful skill to have this year, certainly, because I think we Austin, I think you and I both put out some sort of tweet in the middle of the year, like we're all going to laugh when, the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl again anyway, after like one of their several crushing losses. And this is one of the things where you get to retweet, in February. And it's not the first time I did. I sent that out after the Tyreek Hill trade. I'm just like, oh well, it's going to be hysterical when Patrick Mahomes leads the Chiefs back to the Super Bowl.
And
It's like,
it
so
was.
the and it was. It's a, and that's the thing. It's amazing, but we've already moved beyond the game level and looked more at like, in the season, and we judge a season now by how deep into the postseason the Chiefs go, because that's all that really matters. We know it's a given. It's just a given that they're going, and it's just a matter of like how far do they make it in the postseason. I feel like after this one, or even even before the Super Bowl, the perspective I had was looking at the Chiefs, not as the 2023 Chiefs, but as the Patrick Mahomes era Chiefs, 2019 or 2018 dash, hopefully 2030 something. And I mean, that is, and then, and like I said, the standings I'm looking at are not, where the Chiefs are in the AFC West in November. It's like, where does the 2018 dash 2030 something Chiefs rank among the greatest NFL teams of all time? It's insane, but I mean, am I wrong? It's like, it's the same thing
Not
about,
at all.
I want to say that it's to fans of other teams, and they get it. I mean, that's it. One of the things that's really the most different thing about this year versus the first one by far is just the reaction of other fan bases, right? I mean, they were all happy for us in 2018. I think there
Yeah, we
was
were
also a
the
We were the good guy. We went 150
good
years, and this Patrick Mahomes is amazing. It's a great, it's like, what a special talent. There
Yeah.
might have been a little bit of concern from the rest of the league that, wait a minute, did we just replace one master with another master? Like, is this Animal Farm? Is Patrick Mahomes the
Nice.
pig, and Tom Brady was
Yeah.
the humans? I don't know what's going on here, but there was a little bit of that. But not, I don't think, I think we knew. I don't think the rest of the league really understood the implications of what having Patrick Mahomes on your team was, what could do, not just for your team, but like for the balance of power throughout the NFL.
Yes.
They very much know now. They very much understand that they have replaced one master with another, and this one may be a little bit more benevolent, maybe a little bit less, prone to skullduggery and spying on practices and deflating footballs or whatever, whatever scandal. But this one may also be, may have the league under lockdown even a little bit tighter, and they're not happy. They're not happy about it, but they are very much resigned to it. That's the thing. It's like they're upset, and yet they sort of, when I used to talk about Patrick Mahomes, people would accuse me of hyperbole. Non-Chiefs fans would accuse me of just,
Yes.
oh, You're just you're just so excited. None of that now. They get it. They understand now. They understand what this team, what he's capable of, what this team is capable of around him. I think, one of the things we want to talk about with this game is just how many people other than Patrick Mahomes contributed and had to contribute to win. And that the organization top to bottom right now is just such a well-oiled machine. But in the middle of it is maybe the most perfect football player who ever lived. The only accurate perspective of this team is to say, where is this going to end up in the history of the NFL? And is number one a possibility, both for the Chiefs and for Patrick Mahomes? And given that the standard right now are the 2001 to 2018 Patriots and Tom Brady, I really feel like the underlying story at the foundation of this Super Bowl win is how much the national perspective has changed over the last 6 weeks regarding Patrick Mahomes' legacy with respect to Tom Brady. And it really, I have sensed, I don't know how much you guys have sensed it, or being Taylor, I know you're being in Kansas City, like maybe you're seeing it from a Kansas City lens. So you already felt this way. Everybody around you already felt this way, but I'm sensing in the national gestalt, this sense that 6 weeks ago, if you said that Patrick Mahomes had a chance to equal or certainly surpass Tom Brady, not just in terms of rings, but just in terms of the title of the GOAT.
Right.
It was very much a slow your roll, young man. It was like, yes, Patrick Mahomes is a wonderful quarterback. He might be second best in football when all is said and done, but nobody's challenging Tom Brady. That was the perspective, I would say, 6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That seven rings is just, that is a bar that is just too high to scale. And if you don't equal that, then you don't have a case against Tom Brady, who also holds all the records for whatever passing yards and completions and et cetera, et cetera. Also the longevity as well as the peak.
Right.
But I very much have sensed a shift over the last 6 weeks to the point where people are starting to say, wait a minute, Patrick Mahomes already has three Super Bowls. And yeah, Tom Brady, it's like the thing that Tom Brady had, of course, he won three in his first 4 years as a starter. So like, when you talk about the most rings before a certain age, Tom Brady was way ahead of everybody, but it was also ahead of Patrick Mahomes. But now Patrick's got three, and he got there a little bit later than Tom Brady, age 28. Brady, I think, was probably 26 when he got his third one.
That's right.
But now we're entering that 10-year period where Tom won zero rings.
That's right.
And yes, the his finishing kick in some ways is even more impressive than his starting. To win four rings after age, 35 is sort of insane.
Yeah.
But the point is, Mahomes has like eight chances to move ahead of pace of Tom Brady. And meanwhile, he's playing on a team that looks like it's going to be a Super Bowl contender every single year for the foreseeable future. He has a defense now. And it's just, I'm sensing the national writers starting to hedge their bets about whether or not Patrick Mahomes can do this. And I'm starting to sense a defensiveness from Patriots fans. That's when I knew it was real. Is that Patriots fans, some of whom I may work for at The Ringer, who have a very prominent podcast, talking about Patrick Mahomes and sensing a tone I haven't sensed before, where it used to be, it's like there's still a dismissiveness that Patrick Mahomes can catch Tom Brady, but the fact that they're acknowledging that there is a race, that they're acknowledging that it could happen, or that they have to discuss the possibility.
He's got a long way to go.
He's got a long way to go, but before they wouldn't even mention it. Exactly. And the speed at which he's getting there is I think frightening them a little bit. So that is a really exciting part of this, but I think it's also another reason why I'm kind of looking at this franchise right now from such a bird's eye view, because I said this last week, sort of tongue in cheek, but sort of not. And I actually feel more strongly about it before than I did before. This idea that, I'm thankful Tom Brady has set such a high bar, because it's going to motivate Patrick Mahomes and this organization, but Patrick Mahomes specifically, to not rest until he has equaled or hopefully surpassed Tom Brady in terms of overall success. And his success is our success, my friends. So.
And that's right.
Look at what he said right after the game. He didn't mention Tom Brady by name, but what he said was, "I want to go back to back to back. I want a three-peat. No one has ever done that." And so
Nope.
they're conscious of it. They know. And I mean, listen, I get that it always surprises me that pro athletes sort of run the gamut between, not knowing anything about sports history at all, and then some of them are very conscious of it. But I don't think it's a coincidence that the quarterback of this team knows that there's never been a three-time repeat Super Bowl champion in NFL history. And he's clearly thought about it. And the entire team is clearly aware of it because he's aware of it. And I think that's where it starts. And, just one observation there, like, obviously they're now tied in the number of actual rings that they've won through their age 28 season. We're about to get into the Brady trough, the Brady dip. But like, if you now look at the quarterback with the most Super Bowl appearances by age 28, that's Patrick Mahomes. It's not
Yeah,
Tom
got his
Brady.
fourth one.
You know, he has, sure, one of those was a loss, but we can all agree whether you want to have the perfect record like Jordan or Montana in the big game, it's better to get there and lose just objectively. That is better than losing before you get to the big dance. So he's already ahead of him in terms of pace, for Super Bowl appearances. He's already appeared in more than Brady through his age 28 season. I mean, this is a legitimate conversation and race, and you can tell that they're starting to get upset and scared about it. Let's talk about this game. And speaking of upset and scared, oh my God, this was we got a chance to react to this the night that it happened. But now that we have had 4 or 5 days to sit on this, Randy, I kind of wanted to get your perspective on just kind of your peak moments of anxiety during this game, because it's all great when your team wins at the end, but I think we can all agree that there were several moments in that game where that outcome was at least somewhat in doubt, whether it was the fourth and one that the Chiefs were facing in overtime, down three, where if they didn't convert it, the season was over and they lost the game. Whether it was the third and four with 2 minutes left in regulation at the 2 minute warning with San Francisco on the 35, and a first down puts them in field goal range and able to very nearly kill the clock like the Chiefs did against the Eagles last year to win the Super Bowl. Whether it was third and four with San Francisco at the Kansas City 9 in overtime, what was kind of the moment for you that you thought, I trust in Patrick Mahomes, but I don't know about this one?
I mean, it's funny that, and all that, you don't even bother mentioning, just being down 10 points,
Right. Of
Yeah.
course
That's
not.
an
Yeah, it's
like,
like
that was, I mean, even in the moment, it's just like, I mean, okay, I'm not happy, but it's like, been there, done that. It's like, it's incredible. We've done this so many times that it just, a 10 nothing deficit meant nothing. Being down 10 to 3 going into the half was,
And it's only happened
it's
7 times in Super Bowl history.
He's done
And
it almost as many times. He's done it 3 times. Every other quarterback in NFL history has done it 4 times, a 10-point comeback in the Super Bowl. Yeah, it's crazy. It's so yeah, so that wasn't that. To me, I mean, it's very clear, actually, which where the most anxiety was. And the one it was not, which is because I feel like it's gotten, I mean, it's gotten it was certainly a very anxious moment, but I think it's got almost too much attention, was the third and four in overtime, where Chris Jones was unblocked, and which was extremely important because Purdy not only kind of had to get rid of the ball quickly and overthrew Brandon, was it? I think it was Ayuk he threw.
Yeah.
But on the other side, L'Jarius Sneed actually fell down.
Yes.
And or was he covering
Ayuk?
It was Jennings.
It was on
Jennings,
a slant.
Right. On the left side. So, but the point is, you know, there was a wide open receiver in the end zone that Purdy never even had a chance to look at. But I mean, if Purdy hits the pass there, it's a touchdown. Game is not over,
right?
Like
right.
The game is not over. To me, the game is essentially over when the 49ers had the ball third and five, tie game, from, you know, the, I guess it was our 35-yard line, at the 2-minute warning, right before they actually had the play right at the coming out of the 2-minute warning. They tried to draw the Chiefs offside. Credit to the Chiefs for not, Justin Reed actually ran right up to the line, and for a moment it looked like he was going to cross over. I think he was actually trying to draw them off for a false start. But, you know, sometimes that can go awry. Like, you know, somebody else on the team moves or what. Like, they were well coached even in that. And the 49ers did not get the playoff, but to come back after the 2-minute warning, both teams have, you know, plenty of time to think about what they want to do there. And, you know, to remind everyone of the situation, I mean, this is almost exactly what the Chiefs did to the Eagles last year in the Super Bowl.
It is.
Which is, if they get the first down there, the Chiefs had two timeouts. But if they get it, you have to use the first timeout. And because that play was made right after the 2-minute warning, that actually would have cost the Chiefs 40 seconds. So the first timeout would have just stopped the clock before first down. They could have stopped it again before second down.
Right.
But then they could have run off 40 plus seconds on third and before fourth down. So you're talking about setting up for a go-ahead field goal with probably about 20 to 25 seconds left on the clock.
Right.
And no timeouts.
Right.
Which, you know,
even 13 seconds.
Yeah,
they,
even
they
13
seconds.
Timeouts.
Timeouts.
Yeah.
And
right.
31 seconds and one timeout with the Patriots.
Right.
I think it's 32 seconds after the kickoff return. I mean, I will say, we talked about this, the thin air in Vegas. Like,
Bunker hit from 70 pregame.
He could have tried a kick from midfield.
Sure.
If it could come to that. But it would have been an impossible situation. They needed 5 yards. Five yards on third down. And let's actually take it a step further, though. I actually was probably more concerned on the play before that. Second, because on first and 10,
sure.
Christian McCaffrey ran for 5 yards. Second and five.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, I honestly, you talk about, you know, Kyle Shanahan's gotten some flack for a variety of decisions, which some of which, you know, we'll talk about, well, hopefully all of them, but I think some of them has got more attention than others. I think one of the very unheralded mistakes he made was not just simply running the ball in this situation.
Yes.
Because second and five,
yeah,
I was almost thinking the Chiefs are better off letting them get the first down on that second down play to reset the downs early before the 2-minute warning, because then they could have used both of their timeouts before the 2-minute warning.
100%.
They would have gotten the ball back with like a minute 15 or something like that.
You know, ball, Randy, that's a good strategy.
Well, you know, we've all played Madden, so we know.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, so yeah, I'm sure you've heard this before, and you know, I think it's completely true, but aside from Patrick Mahomes, Trent McDuffie may have been the MVP of this game for the Chiefs. I mean, there's so many people who deserve it, but like before you tipped that pass on third and five, he tackled George Kittle on second and five, you know, a completed pass. George Kittle is not easy to bring down. I mean, think about McDuffie. He's not a big guy, and yet he tackles so hard, and he brought him down for 0 yards.
Yeah,
if they got even 2 yards on that play, right? I mean, that's what I'm saying. If they just run, they could have just, you know, eaten 2 to 3 yards at a time. But he brought him down for no gain. If it had been third and three, I think everything is different. I think they almost certainly run there. And frankly, on third and five, I was kind of worried they would call a running play. And even if they didn't get the full 5 yards, if they'd gotten to fourth and two in
they
that situation,
gone for
I think the smart move in that situation, you go for it, because if you go for it there, the game's over. You can literally take the clock down to the final,
To
1 second, call
zero.
timeout, whatever. And worst case, you're going to overtime, even if you miss it. And you know, 2 or 3 yards. I mean, they had already gone for it. That's what's so interesting to me, is that they had
And
gone
they had
for
the
it on
2 minute
fourth and
warning
three.
to come to that conclusion, Randy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And but I all credit to Spags for the play call, and the Chiefs in general. We you know, Andy Reid has a somewhat deserved reputation for clock mismanagement at times in his career. I think he's gotten better at it, but in this situation, understanding that giving up a touchdown in that on the third and five was actually less damaging to the Chiefs than giving up a 7 yard completed pass that stayed in bounds. I mean, the idea that you absolutely have to sell out, you have to blitz, and you don't have you have to take a high risk, high reward strategy here, because playing this straight up is the most likely way to give up the worst case scenario, which is not a touchdown. Like, understanding that in the moment, they had the 2 minute warning to think about it, but they came out. And so, when the play was snapped and we saw, a cornerback blitz, we saw the a very aggressive play call, I was in that split second where I could process it. Extremely happy that this is exactly the way you have to play this. And McDuffie got his hands up, and it worked beautifully. But I was extremely anxious in that moment that we just were not going to see the ball again. It was not going to be a dramatic game winning, touchdown with 3 seconds. It was just going to be, they were just going to bleed the clock out. So that was, to me, by far the most important, the scariest moment, the most important play of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Did you have any? I think that one, and then the other one that I mentioned, and I guess the fourth and one in overtime, and this sort of bleeds into sort of my next question. And I guess, yeah, obviously, this has been, I would say, the number one source of takes and discourse about this game, because it was the first time we've had the new playoff overtime rules since 13 seconds. The Chiefs and Niners obviously had wildly different approaches to how they were going to approach this game. We've now seen the footage of Mahomes reacting to the Niners' decision to take the ball first in overtime, and the visible shock on his face when they said that they wanted the ball first. You've had 4 or 5 days to think about this. We obviously got some takes fired off in real time right after the game, but I'm wondering if you have any new thoughts, any fresh thoughts about the whole overtime situation, how the teams approached it, how it played out.
This will not shock you. I have many thoughts, Joey. So, I mean,
Please
regarding
elaborate.
the fourth and one play, I mean, there was certainly that moment of, oh my God, this game could be over,
Right. If we
like, in one
don't
play.
a short yardage play for the season, good thing we never screw those up.
Yeah, good thing that's
exactly.
our bread and butter.
Exactly. I mean, it was, if it had been fourth and three, I would have been terrified. Yeah, fourth and
Sure.
one, it was like half even. It was right after the problem, of course, it came right after a third and one. Turned
Stuff.
up,
Yeah, where they
turned
got
it a half a
stuffed, right?
yard. So yeah, it was terrifying. And my thought, and I imagine it was your thought, and probably Andy Reid's thought, which is a good thing, is there during that timeout was, I do whatever happens, I do not want the season to end because the ball was not in Patrick Mahomes' hands.
Yes.
That was what I think we were all thinking. And so they line up, and Patrick fakes the snap, fakes the handoff to Pacheco. And for that tiny moment, and he wasn't running up the middle, right? It was like he was moving to his left, so almost a more of a sweep type act, running action. But still, it was that brief moment was like, oh no. And then you realize it's a fake and a bootleg. And at that moment, it's just like the ball's in Patrick Mahomes. I just had that. For the half second before we knew the outcome of the play, it was just, I had the complete confidence, my man has the ball, he will know what to do. And it was a brilliant play call because it was essentially an option. And, Nick Bosa was still chasing Pacheco down. But they sold it. They sold it well because Nick Bosa did not realize where the ball was for a critical 2 seconds or so. It wasn't a close play in the end. But yeah, that was certainly nerve wracking. But the fact that the Chiefs went for it in the first place is because, of course, they got the ball second, right? Which is what we're talking about here. Like, I do wonder. I mean, would the Chiefs have gone for it on 4th and 1 from their own 34 if they had started with the ball?
Kind of hard to imagine Andy doing that, don't you think?
You know,
just based on how he coaches,
it is, and it is like. It absolutely would have been the right move. Like it would have been
Agreed
lunacy.
There.
It would have been lunacy to punt the ball away in create a sudden death situation.
Yeah. Field goal
at high elevation.
Yes,
like, all, and yet, you know, have
Moody's
gone
kicked 250
half
plus
yard.
Yarders in that game. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet and it's a half yard. It's not even a 1 yard. And yet, yes, I do wonder what Andy Reid's gone for it. So this gets to the whole point of the overtime coin toss, and the first thing I want to do, I want to back up a little bit because Kyle Shanahan has taken a lot of shit for wanting the ball, for receiving the ball,
sure,
and I don't really think like it's a questionable decision, but I don't think it's a terrible decision because the nature of the new overtime rules and the reason why I like them so much is that there is no terrible decision.
I know
the coin toss, the decision
crazy.
Now, the new rule. I didn't appreciate when they first passed it. In part because they only did it because
the Chiefs won.
The Chiefs won an overtime game when it didn't matter when we lost one.
Right.
So there was some of that, but when I saw the statistical modeling of what the new rules would do, and you guys may have seen this couple. It was a few weeks, I think, after the rule was passed, and one of the smart guys on Twitter, smart football guys on Twitter, ran the modeling and basically said that their model showed that with the new rules, the team that receives the ball first wins. I want to say it was like 50.3% of the time.
Sure.
Which it was just like you couldn't design a model that got closer to 50% than what that is. Like that is so within the margin of error that nobody could conclude it's even the right move to take it first. In fact, I think based on this game, most people would say it's better to take it second. But the point is that there is no advantage either way. So the answer of should you kick or receive is simple. It depends.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah.
It's great because now whatever happens in a playoff overtime game from now on, you cannot blame the coin. You can blame everything around it, but you can't blame the coin itself.
Yep.
Right. So that part of it, Shanahan, there is a legitimate rationale for taking it first, which is the team that gets the ball first gets it third. And so, if you have the ball third, it's now sudden death. So in the event neither team scores or both teams score a field goal or score a 7-point touchdown, you then have the advantage, right? The advantage of getting the ball second is you know what the other team has done. You know what exactly you have to do. You have 4 downs if you need it. But if you guys match, match scoring or don't score, then the other team. So the point is, it's a very balanced edge each way. My analysis of this is basically that in a game where you think the defenses have the advantage, then you should receive the ball first because it's unlikely both teams will score a touchdown. If you both kick a field goal or if you neither team scores, now you have the ball first and sudden death. In a situation in which offense is more ascendant, you want the ball second because if the team that receives it first does not score a touchdown wins. And if they do, and this is the key, and this is why I think the take-home point from this whole coin toss controversy is not that the Niners necessarily did anything wrong with their decision. It's I was so heartened, so thrilled by learning how well the Chiefs have prepared for this.
Yeah.
Because the point of if you have the ball second is it changes the calculus in that a tie is actually, favors the other team. So you want to be,
right.
You want strategies that increase your odds of winning it now, even if they also increase your odds of losing it now. In other words, if the other team scores seven and you score a touchdown, there's absolutely no point in kicking the extra point. Now it's sudden death. The other team's got the ball, and both offenses are
right. Motoring. Let's run right. one play and get it done. Yeah. Right.
So you know that, I know that, but this is literally the first playoff, forget Super Bowl, first playoff game played under these rules. And it could have easily taken at least one game. Like now, because of this game, everyone understands the math involved.
Yeah.
The logic involved.
There
was absolutely a possibility that going into a game like this, that teams didn't. We know this because the San Francisco 49ers did not. Their no, players literally did not. But the Chiefs, to hear Chris Jones after the game saying, we talked about this in August. We talked about this all season long. And not just that we knew what the rules were. We knew if we won the coin toss, we were taking the ball second. And if they scored a touchdown, we were going for two. The last thing I would want in that situation, like what would have been a huge controversy. The first team scores seven, you come down, you score a touchdown, and then right in the 45 seconds you have, maybe you call a timeout or whatever, but you suddenly decide, oh, we're going to go for two, we're going to end this game right now with no prep time, emotionally, psychologically, like the players, that's a lot to put on guys. But to have that in your head for 5 months.
They had a play for it, too. And that,
to me, is
fascinating. They've been practicing a play for overtime, two-point conversion in the Super Bowl for like 6 months, I bet.
Yeah. Well, it's incredible. What a luxury it is to be a team that is so so certain that you're going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. If this were only a rule in the Super Bowl, one thing. But like, it's actually kind of surprising there has not been a playoff overtime game in the last 2 years until this one. Like that's why it's so shocking to me that the 49ers, the players didn't know this could have happened. Almost happened against both the Packers and the Lions.
Right. This is their seventh playoff game under the new rules. This was not their first opportunity in the playoffs that could have ended. If this had been the Lions, they still wouldn't have had a plan there. I mean, they were just unprepared.
I don't think they necessarily made the wrong move to receive it, but it's just unconscionable to me that their players did not know. And when we have, video, audio evidence in the moment, mic'd up guys. Kyle Juszczyk's like, you hear him saying, "I didn't know that if we score a touchdown, your game's not over." Like,
gives a great face
too. It would have been it would take the chance of losing, but it would have been beyond awesome if the Niners, having scored a touchdown on that opening drive, that at least some of their players
ran onto the field,
jumping up and down after we pulled. And like, meanwhile, the Chiefs are looking at them like just absolutely mystified. Could you
Chiefs imagine, are putting their helmets on and the Niners are looking
could
for the
confetti.
Could you
imagine if they had celebrated if they just won the Super Bowl and then the Chiefs come down and beat like – and imagine the emotional letoff, like the how much blame would have been on. Well, they were not emotionally prepared to play defense because
How about somebody takes a helmet off or somebody runs onto the field that wasn't supposed to be, and then they have to kick off from 15 yards back, and the Chiefs start off
or they miss the extra point. I mean,
they take the 15 on the extra point. Sure, I mean they definitely could have screwed this up. This created a funny situation. The Chiefs are the only team in Super Bowl history to ever run a fourth down play where a non-conversion instantly loses the Super Bowl, because there have actually only been two other fourth downs run under 5 minutes by the trailing team by within a touchdown ever in the Super Bowl. In 2008, the Giants converted a fourth and one down four against the Patriots.
Undefeated Patriots
and won that game. And then in 2022, the Rams actually were driving on the Bengals down 16-20 with 4:54 left and converted a fourth and one. But they, in both of those scenarios, the Giants and the Rams had all three timeouts. So even if they don't convert their fourth and one, they get three stops. They can at least get the ball back. The Chiefs were not in that scenario at all. If the Chiefs do not get that fourth and one, that game instantly ends. So I just thought that was kind of a funny.
Well, I mean, this is also the only walk-off touchdown season championship ending walk off touchdown when a team was trailing.
When a team was trailing, that's right,
yeah.
because the
Sure.
28-3, they enter overtime tied, of course. There's never been a overtime where both playoff teams scored in overtime. That's
It's
never
also the
happened
only the
before.
only it's a, it's just absolutely
It's
hysterical to me.
crazy.
The only championship walk-off touchdown pass
Yeah.
was well, it's of course who threw it? Of course, Patrick. Like, that's another thing. We're starting to tally up the things that Patrick has that Tom Brady doesn't.
Sure.
Back to our
That's a
legacy
good
one.
one.
That's one I like. I do think it's unbelievable. Mecole Hardman, who signed a 1-year deal with the New York Jets, and in six games, I think was like caught one pass.
Yeah, nothing.
Just
Yep.
caught the most clutch touchdown pass in the history of football. I mean,
And
just
he
bomb in
didn't
that
know the
game.
game was over
Yeah.
because he was in training camp with the Jets, who were definitely not talking about
Yes,
the
they did
playoff
not.
overtime rule. The
He would not
Jets.
have known to go for two. So
No, would not have
the
known. Jets didn't know what the playoffs were. So they literally have the longest playoff drought. So yeah,
yeah.
that was quite the change for McColl.
But it was but just the preparation that we heard. It was just another game. I mean, the 49ers are a very well-run organization,
They are.
but
Yeah, sure, of
you
course.
know, although they certainly, you know, seem a little bit in disarray since the Super Bowl, maybe exposing a few things with
They do.
coordinators getting fired and teammates throwing each other under the bus on Twitter. It's
Yeah. Yeah.
it's
They are,
real
well,
shame that's happening, guys. I really, really feel terrible.
it is telling too, just to add to that thought, like the person that revealed the Chiefs' plan after the game was Chris Jones. Like it wasn't Yes, an a defensive offensive
player.
player.
Exactly. It
Yep.
was
It
a
was
defensive player.
yes.
Absolutely.
The entire team was so well versed in what was going to happen if the game went to overtime in the Super Bowl that Chris Jones was like, "Oh yeah, we were going to get a touchdown and go for two. Like we That's wanted the ball culture, man. second." That's
Yeah.
culture.
I mean, exactly.
The defense. And we know that, Andy, even though he's the head coach, I mean, he doesn't during the regular season spend a ton of time with defensive guys. Chris Jones has said before that like he doesn't talk Yeah. to Andy that much during the season because Andy's coaching the offense and he still knew. He knew. Everybody on the team knew what the Chiefs were going to do, and that is a stark difference.
I mean, it's really, it is a reflection of, like you said, it just the organization beyond Patrick Mahomes is in such a good place right now. It's so gratifying to root for them as a Chiefs fan, obviously, but also it is one of the reasons why I don't think it is completely insane to talk about, you know, extending this dynasty to something even beyond what it is already.
Yeah.
And
Yep.
I think, you know, that kind of leads into something. One other thing I wanted to talk about, which is sort of as much as, you know, obviously Patrick Mahomes was Super Bowl MVP for a third time, and I think by the end of the game, he certainly was the deserving MVP. I mean, the overtime drive, mind you, insane. First time in NFL history, the first drive in NFL history in which a quarterback had at least 27 rushing yards, eight completions, and no incompletions. The
Crazy.
first drive, not playoff, not
Yeah,
Super Bowl,
crazy.
any
Drive.
drive, anytime, anywhere. It was overtime. Down, lose while losing in overtime, the perfect drive to complete, you know, that game. So, you know, absolutely the deserving Super Bowl MVP. He's got three Super Bowl MVPs. Brady only had two at this point. A small thing, but
Yeah.
something to mark up.
Something he's
But
got on him. Yep.
even with that, like, you don't win this game without the contributions of an absolutely ridiculous number of people. I mean, Mike Pennell, practice squad, you know, veteran, like Mike Pennell was not supposed to be on this roster, wouldn't have probably been on the roster had there not been, you know, injuries to both Derek Nnadi and Charles Omenihu, and was like schooling Trent
Yeah,
Williams,
he
right?
was awesome,
Leo
crushing.
Chennault, fourth linebacker,
Leo was
having
incredible.
like the, you know, maybe the best game of his career in limited snaps. He was making, you know, enormous contributions. Obviously.
CMC fumble, blocked extra point. I mean, it might be his best game, and his second best game might be last year's Super
Right,
Bowl. Chennault's
last
a
year's Super Bowl,
dog,
I
I
was
was
going
going
to
to say.
say. It's crazy, you know, some of the contributions we saw from these guys. I mean, obviously, you know, yeah, everyone knows Harrison Butker, but like Tommy Townsend, like handling a really difficult snap and getting that down.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously, McDuffie and Legarius just absolute lockdown. Spags' defensive plan and adjusting that plan so that in the second half, you know, by the end of the game, they had played what man coverage on over 60% of the snaps, the highest percentage of man coverage in the history of Steve Spagnuolo's defensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs,
crazy,
while still blitzing like crazy and playing single high safety.
Right.
Like, it essentially, it was just like, the way to stop these guys is we're going to put both L'Jarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie on an island against Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk,
and feel good about it.
And it worked. Like, he did, like, because it was just like, we are going to stop the run. We are going to take away the run, and we're going to do that by moving everybody up, by blitzing repeatedly, and the cost of that is having two guys to cover two guys, and it's just, and it worked, right? Like, you can't do that unless you have two of the five best cornerbacks in football. And with all of that, it was an overtime win by the narrowest of margins. And it's interesting because, you know, when I look back at Tom Brady's career and, you know, seven championships, one of the things that always was kind of galling, you know, when I looked at it from the perspective of, oh, how the hell does Patrick Mahomes catch this guy? It was galling because, so, you know, the number of rings that Brady won could so easily have been less than seven.
Sure.
I mean, Malcolm Butler with the interception.
Yeah, right.
Boom, that's one. Coming back from 28-3, yeah, it's an incredible comeback, but, like,
you know, down
Kyle
25.
Shannon, they were down 25, and Kyle Shannon probably tightened up a little with the offense.
Kyle could have run the ball.
He could have. Yeah.
Could have. I mean, there was some of that. Some of it was just like, you know, they had to, like, convert on 2-point conversions, like, twice. If,
yep.
And, you know, what they were, they're one play away from not winning, you know, that Super Bowl, from not winning the Seahawks Super Bowl. And, of course, not getting to the Super Bowl when they beat the Chiefs in the 2018 AFC Championship game, right?
Sure.
Ford off ball, offside penalty, right? That, I mean, three of his seven are right there.
The tuck rule. I mean,
oh god, yeah, the tuck
escaped
rule.
Quite a bit of jams in his
right. More
seven
than
Super
half,
Bowl wins.
And that, I mean, think about that, because two of those at least occurred in the Super Bowl. Two of those, the tuck rule and the D4 play, they don't get to the Super Bowl. So the more than half of his rings. Literally, you change one play.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it doesn't happen. So there's always been kind of that, but it's like, it's interesting. I mean, this is just the nature of, this is why football is such a compelling sport, right? It's like, most games come down to something like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, this game we just talked about, there were, you know, three different moments in this game where the Chiefs were basically one play away from losing.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. They were, you know, against the Eagles, there was, you know, very similar situations. You know, they don't get the holding call on you know, the last play from scrimmage. Then they're not able to run the clock down to like 8 seconds, and they're kicking a field goal, and Jalen Hurts getting the ball back with 2 minutes to go. Like,
right.
So, yeah, I feel a little less, you know, bitter about like the way Tom Brady won all his championships, and I just kind of realized, you know what? The way to win that many rings, if you're going to the Super Bowl that many times, inevitably the games are going to turn on one play here, one play there. And
yeah.
if you go to the playoffs every single year, you're going to have some bad breaks. I mean, we had our bad break against the Bengals, but you're also, you know, you're going to have good breaks too. And if you're the more prepared team and you have the supporting cast, you're going to have, you know, because the thing about Brady is, like I said, it's like, oh, well, Malcolm Butler's the reason. Well, he wouldn't have won without X player X.
Right.
Well, that's the case here too with Mahomes. That,
yeah.
that happened
yep.
absolutely here. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And now I feel like, okay, mm-hmm. Now maybe Patrick's, you know, you could claim at least one of his rings. He doesn't get it without his teammates. And theoretically, all of them are that way. But the point is, yeah, you could point to this one for sure. Okay, well, Brady's got several of those. So I don't feel quite so bad about that. And
Pat's catching him in those too. He's just chasing him in everything.
It doesn't matter. I mean, but ultimately, I mean, what's as impressive as winning seven rings is going to 10 Super Bowls in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Like you said, Mahomes has been to four. Like that, in some ways, that record's almost as impressive as the number of Super Bowl victories. It's just the number of Super Bowl appearances.
Right. Sure.
But
he's, you know, one
he's
away from John
away from
John Elway for the second most of all time.
Yep. I
That's the
mean,
only thing Elway still has on him, by the way.
maybe
It's
we
the
can
only thing.
maybe we can get John to come back for that to present that trophy as well.
To
No,
reprise his
that's too
role next
much.
year.
Yeah, no, that would be too much to ask for. Some miracles are only meant to happen one time.
That was magical. So let's put a pin in the Super Bowl 58 and just kind of again kind of take a look at this roster as it currently stands. The Chiefs, by I mean, I would say all accounts, including our own, were not a very great football team, at least for most of the year. They weren't very impressive a lot of times. They struggled even during the 6-1 start to the regular season. The offense was misfiring pretty frequently. There were still a lot of drops. They just were pulling out the games. And then, of course, they hit their big losing streak. They lost 5 of 8. They looked lost. They looked frustrated. They were anything but a championship-looking team. And then, they rip off the final 6 games of the year, but even the red zone offense was really, really struggling in that stretch. The Chiefs really still failed to execute. I guess the reason I'm recapping that is to say that most of the time when you win the Super Bowl, that squad kind of worries about being as good as they were last year, next year. They worry about being able to recapture that magic and move it forward. I'm not really sure how this team theoretically could play much worse on offense next year. Are you optimistic about the 2024 team being able to improve on what this team was?
I mean, certainly as a regular season team, absolutely. I think, I mean, you know, unfortunately or unfortunately, the way we are going to, evaluate the legacies of all these teams is based purely on postseason performance at this point.
At
And
this point,
postseason
yeah.
performance is, you know, the subject to such a small sample size. You know, if the Chiefs lose their first playoff game next year, it could be something as simple as Patrick Mahomes had a concussion, you know, early in
Yeah,
the game or
sure.
something. You know, so they could be a much better team and just. And still have like you know their ability to play better in the playoffs and just have one bad game, you know, one tipped pass, you know, gets returned for a pick six, whatever. So it's, you know, this doesn't mean they will improve upon their postseason performance,
I
certainly.
agree. Yeah.
But yes, I think 11-6 is almost their floor, barring some, you know, just absolutely catastrophic set of injuries or, you know, some sort of mutiny occurs. I don't even know what would happen to make them, you know, miss the playoffs. One thing to keep in mind, I'm trying to see if I can find the exact numbers here, but I know it's been reported that the Chiefs had, I think, the youngest defense in football,
They did. They
right?
absolutely did.
I know the Packers had I think by far the youngest offense, maybe the youngest offense to ever make the playoffs or win a playoff game, but the youngest defense and forgive me because I don't have data to prove this is the case, but I highly suspect when it comes to age as a sort of a future indicator, as a predictor of a team's improvement or decline in the future, I suspect your age on defense is much more important or more important, maybe not much more, but more important than offense.
It's a
The
good
reason for
theory.
that is that I just think speed and athleticism, you know, is more important on defense. And that is a skill you lose much more quickly. Like you see offensive players who are still elite into their late 30s. Obviously, quarterbacks, obviously. I mean, we see, you know, Travis Kelce's 34,
Travis
maybe not what he is, but
Kelce.
he's still good. But like, was it Andrew
Wide
Whitworth
receivers.
who was like the left tackle for the Rams who was like
Yeah,
40
sure.
and
Yeah,
was still
absolutely.
like at the top of his game,
Absolutely.
very, very good. Like offensive linemen, they don't have to be athletic in the sense of the quick twitch muscle athletic.
I
Right,
mean,
young 20s
when
athletic,
you're
yeah,
playing offense, you know where you're going and you're
exactly.
dictating what's happening, and the
And
defense has to
you're
react to
not, and you
that.
don't have to move a lot of the times. So, you know, if you're on the line, you're trying to keep other people from moving. Whereas on defense, yeah, it's you have to change direction. You don't know where you're going, and you're trying to get around the wall in front of you. You can, so I have a feeling. You know, you think about like a 35-year-old cornerback does not seem like a very common phenomenon.
Impossible.
So if the Chiefs had older players on defense and a younger offense, you could worry about a quick defensive decline as a possibility. But like, I mean, look at the ages of some of their most important defensive players. Yes, Chris Jones is, I think, 29. Of course, Chris Jones is the guy may be gone, so in which case his age won't matter. But like Trent McDuffie is 23. L'Jarius Sneed is 26. Hopefully they'll be able to bring him back. But like the entire secondary, I mean, the entire 2022 draft class, they're going into their third year. And that you almost think that the third year is actually maybe the peak of the year you get the most amount of value out of a draft class, because they've developed, they've had 2 years to develop, but they're still a year away from being able to sign long-term contracts that dramatically raise the price relative to the salary cap. So the value you get for the dollar on a drafted player is generally going to be at its highest in its third year. And the fact that these guys were so good from their
Their first two
first year,
years, right?
right? From first year is unusual, but it's easy to forget that they probably are still getting better. Maybe it's hard to get any better than they are already, but they don't really have to get better than they were this year. But they're not going to get more expensive, that draft class, at least for 2024.
Right.
And the Chiefs have some very difficult decisions to make about Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed primarily. But also, I mean, I think Willie Gay is a free agent, and I have a feeling, if they're going to try and save money anywhere, it might be on with him, letting him
Right.
go.
Yeah.
And this is going to be the year they have to decide: are they going to sign Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and Nick Bolton to long-term contracts? Which is, again, all a good thing, because it's a reflection of the 2021 draft and how well they did there. But at the same time, the salary cap is going up by $15 million. And that's why this idea that, oh, they won't be there's no way they can sign both Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed. I'm not willing to put that past Brett Veach yet, and not just because Chris
And
Jones
Clark Hunt.
and Clark Hunt too, but figure out a way with the cap. And Chris Jones is Austin, you're a lawyer. That was a binding contract, right? Like
Yeah,
the wolf book at the
I think
parade.
that's definitely, what was funny about that, I'm sure you saw the tweet, but his one
His
of his
agent.
agents
Yeah.
either
Tweedledum. It was
Tweedledee,
Tweedledum.
either okay,
Yeah.
it's Tweedledee. I was gonna say it was Tweedledee or Tweedledum. Taylor's telling me it was Tweedledum. Did ask them to cut Chris off. I do think if Chris goes back on his word, whether that's a binding oral contract or not, his agents will be the most hated figures in Kansas City sports history in recent memory. I mean, I can't think of somebody in the last 10 years. I don't know, Madison Bumgarner, Tom Brady. I mean, that's water under the bridge. If somebody like Chris Jones leaves this team in the midst of the success that they're having after saying he wants to be a three-time repeat champion, because of the Katz brothers, oof. I don't know if they will ever be able to show their face in Kansas City again.
Well, I don't think they're gonna have a reason to, because it's not like they have any other clients that like to play football, right? Like basically.
Oh
Oh,
yeah, that's a
man.
good point.
Yeah. So but yeah, I don't want to rule out the possibility that they could get this done with
Sure.
both of them, and it may be, I mean, MVS is, I think, is 11 million or so on the cap
Yeah,
this
he's
year,
probably
and
a cap
they can buy him
casualty.
out for like two. I mean, there are things they can do. And I mean, the other thing about Chris Jones playing on this 1 year deal is he all of his salary counted against the salary cap this year. Now the
Right.
incentives didn't. They just paid, I think, the 4.25, which will go
Yep.
on next year's. But the point is, if he signs a long-term deal, you that the first year or two is generally you see a pretty steep decline in
Right.
the cap hit. So there's a
Right.
way to keep Chris Jones without having him contribute any more to the cap. In fact, maybe saving money on the cap next year versus this year.
Yep.
And L'Jarius, there's a way to, depending on the size of the signing bonus, you can make it so that, he's got a very gentle cap hit for the first year or two. And the cap is going to, I think, fans of the sport who worried so much about the cap sometimes forget just how quickly it's likely to increase over the next couple of years, both because football has just like never been healthier. And, Taylor Swift alone is probably responsible for a couple hundred grand in the cap going up over the next couple of years, but also because of the way the cap is calculated based on, revenues from, I think it's like over the past 3 years that there was that obvious hit with the pandemic in
That they're going to recover
2020,
from.
but it doesn't recover. It didn't recover in 1 year. It's built into the formula. So it's actually, it recovers, it takes time, but that recovery is still ongoing. And so, next year's cap is expected. I think this year was about 225, maybe a shade under 225. So they're saying it's going to be at least 240 next year. It might be significantly more than 240.
Right,
We'll see.
Taylor Swift bump. It's going to be good for him. And the Super Bowl was the most watched television program of all time. I mean, like you said, football never been healthier.
Yeah, so I think, there is money to play with here. And so based on all of that, and then based on the fact that the receiving core could not be worse than it was during the regular season. Like just
Sure.
one more competent receiver, either through the draft or through free agency. The fact that, any veteran who wants to, win at one ring before they retire, the Chiefs have long been on speed dial for them, but absolutely they're gonna have their pick of whatever veteran free agent wants to come and play with Patrick Mahomes for a year or two. So I know somebody's gonna pick the Chargers, but I just yes, they got Jim Harbaugh now, but I think that the Chiefs are the favorite to win the AFC West. And and the other thing is they've proven that they can take a regular season not to hide their weaknesses, but to work through them, right? Like the way that they handled this receiving core and the play calling and they were a different team in the playoffs. I just feel like even if they're 11-6 next year, even if they're 10-7, as long as they're one of the 14 teams out of 32, as long as they're one of the top 40%, they'll be in the playoffs. And at that point, even the rest of the league at this point just understands it doesn't really matter if Patrick Mahomes is on the other side and it's a playoff game, at home on the road, one receiver, five receivers,
In the parking lot, doesn't
it
matter.
doesn't matter. But again, the fact that, I mean, we talk about how motivated Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce are to three-peat. I'm sure Andy Reid is motivated, to do something nobody's ever done. I'd like to think Clark Hunt is too. I see no reason. Like, so you talk about, if the money, maybe, if money is, if there's a way to make it work by just writing a check. I mean, there's things you can't do with because of the cap, but if you're willing to write checks creatively, you can circumvent it to some degree, right? I think that's the case, and I think that's why it's such a good sign that we already know, before the parade, Joe Cullen signed to a contract extension.
Yes.
Spagnuolo, the morning
Spags.
of, signed. We just heard today,
Tope.
Dave Tobe signed, right? Like, I really would. I would love to know this for a fact, but I would like to think that Clark Hunt is spending more on his assistant coaches than like almost any owner in the sport. Like that is the way,
I have to
because
think
there is no
that's
cap
the
there,
case.
and that, I mean, he seems committed to winning. Like all you want from an owner is a commitment to winning and to valuing the next win more than the next dollar. And there's football's diabolically designed to limit the way you can invest in your players, but where you can still grab that advantage is on the coaching side. And so the fact that they have kept the guys that they've wanted to keep, right? And the only guy really lost is Eric Bieniemy for obvious reasons. The guy wanted, a better opportunity that he couldn't get in Kansas City, and even he was back for the stretch run. So I really it would warm my heart to know for a fact that Clark Hunt is so committed to winning that he's paying these guys, outrageous salaries relative to other teams, but he has the best defensive coordinator in football. He has maybe the
Maybe
best
ever.
defensive line coach in football. He has maybe the best special teams coach. Like Tobe's gotten a lot of crap this year, but like the Chiefs special teams rankings by DVOA every year are
And they're
elite.
every year, they're
This
great.
year it was like ninth or 10th, and it was like shocking because they weren't like top three. And then in the playoffs, I mean, we just won a Super Bowl, which the other team fumbled a kick, a punt, and had an extra point blocked. I mean, there was a special teams disaster in the Super Bowl, and it wasn't our team. So, and those things, I mean, those things are repeatable. That's the thing. It's like
Right.
these guys have a proven ability to take the talent, whatever talent they have, and make it better. So I really feel like the quest for a three-peat next year is going to be a great storyline, not just for the Chiefs, but for the NFL.
Yeah.
They're going to
Oh,
have a target on their
100%.
back, and they're welcoming it, and you know, they love it, and I really think that Roger Goodell secretly loves it too. It's going to be incredibly compelling, and if they make the Super Bowl next year, no, this year's Super Bowl was the most watched ever, and I think next year's may very well break that, just as long as you know, Travis and Taylor are still together, I suppose.
Let's close here, Randy. Last year, after the Chiefs' victory in Super Bowl 57, one of the things we asked you about in our recap show was Hall of Famers on the roster. And we kind of played a little game where we did NFL Hall of Famer, Ring of Honor, you know, one day contract retires as a Chief. And you know, the three guys that, of course, were the no-brainer Hall of Famers were the same ones that, frankly, were no-brainer Hall of Famers before the Chiefs won the Super Bowl last year and before they won the Super Bowl this year: Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. But everybody else on this team, you know, maybe projectable, you know, maybe if they keep this up, maybe if they do XYZ in the future, maybe they're in the conversation for the Hall of Fame down the road, or debatable on the bubble. Is there anyone from this back-to-back Super Bowl winning run, Super Bowl 57, Super Bowl 58 champions, that has really elevated their career standings, where now you're thinking the gold jacket, the NFL Hall of Fame is an inevitability? And if you have any of those guys, who are they and why?
I mean, there are quite a few of them, honestly. And
Yeah.
we so you know, we talk about, you know, Reid, Mahomes, Kelce. Like, here's the thing. Let's go beyond Hall of Fame, even Ring of Honor, whatever. Let's talk about like the Mount Rushmore of their position. Top three, maybe even top two all time. Andy Reid, you could make
Yeah,
that case, right?
sure.
He's certainly on the Mount
100%.
Rushmore of head coaches. Patrick Mahomes, yes.
Easy.
Travis Kelce, yes. All three of
Undebatable.
them are right now, all three of them have a case to be top two at least, right?
Right.
Maybe Andy Reid, you know, there may be some more discussion, but three Super Bowl wins now. Like the man who couldn't win the big one four
Has
years and
won
one
three
month
big
ago
ones.
has won more than anybody except, you know, the only people with more are Chuck Knoll and Belichick, right? So
Yes.
all three of those guys. There's one other guy who is probably on the Mount Rushmore of his position. And that's Steve Spagnuolo,
Yeah.
right? And we're talking about, so we talk about who on this roster, who on this organization right now is going into the Hall of Fame in Canton, right? I think we start with Reid, Mahomes, Kelce, but I mean, and this is something 6 weeks ago we wouldn't have said. Steve Spagnuolo, they're just like we talk about. I feel like the narrative has shifted on certain things with Mahomes and his legacy and the Chiefs and dynasty talk and all that. I think the narrative on Spagnuolo has changed to the point where he might actually end up in the Hall of Fame. Like,
Sure.
I think there's one coordinator who's ever made it. Was it Dick LeBeau who's in the Hall of
Oh,
Fame?
that's
And
funny. I
he
hadn't thought
had
about
a yeah, I think he had, and he had a playing career. I mean, he was around the game forever. Like, it was like a
that.
lifetime achievement award, which is fine. But like, there's no reason Spags couldn't be the first. I mean, what he
Right.
did this year, we're talking about the man with the greatest single game as coordinator in NFL history, now with arguably the single greatest
Run.
postseason run by
Yep.
a coordinator in NFL history, and has four titles, like, and has more championships as a coordinator than anyone in history. That's a hell of a legacy. So, you know, let's say he has a chance at the Hall of Fame. Chris
Harrison
Jones.
Bucker.
Well, yes, so whether I was gonna get the butter. Chris Jones, I think, is at the point now, three titles.
Yeah.
I think he's, I mean, I think that is a
And
massive.
crucial to those three titles.
Absolutely. The last two, especially. But yes, 100%. I really, you know, he was the most important player on the defense, you know, that this year and last year. Like, we talk about how good the defense was this year, but let's not forget that last year, the defense was significantly better in the second half
Yes, it
than it
was.
had been. Now, and to me, that actually is, you could actually pinpoint the moment at which the defense went from the sort of, acceptably mediocre, given the Patrick Mahomes and, the all world offenses running things, to like actually, the engine driving the Chiefs' success midseason. I think it was the moment that Trent McDuffie came back from his injury, right? He
Yeah,
missed the first
great
half of his
point.
rookie season, and I feel like it was really when he came back, it was after the bye week, and then the Chiefs, the points per game, everything about their defense got better. So I mean, we talk about guys who are at the very beginnings of their career. It's too early to say, but like may end up in the Hall of Fame one day. Trent McDuffie would be at the, very high on that list. Legarius Sneed, maybe. I mean, if you're arguing he might be the best cornerback in the sport, if you can maintain that, and both of those guys have two rings now,
Right.
so they definitely have to be considered. But you said it already, Harrison Butker. That's the guy I really feel like this season, both the
I
regular
mean,
season and the postseason. I mean, he had his best year of his career, one of the best years by a kicker in history.
right.
Missed two kicks of any type all season long.
One
One
had
of those
one
with a ball.
non-deflated.
Yeah,
Yeah, right.
one of those with a deflated ball in New England of all places. That's kind of crazy.
Longest kick in Super Bowl history, most
Most
kicks in
Super Bowl
Super Bowl
kicks,
history.
right? Longest
Yeah.
one, and he also
And most in a single game.
most in a single game, and the most 50-yard playoff kicks in NFL history.
Right.
It was six, moving ahead of Adam Vinatieri in that regard.
I mean, if you're talking about Mount Rushmore, the guy's
Right.
28. He's the same
Right.
age as
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes.
He's
Right.
7 years younger than Justin Tucker.
That's.
And I mean, so much of this is based on the postseason success. Because again, Butker,
Exactly.
there are guys who have a lot more success, just incredibly long careers as kickers.
Morten Anderson,
But
couple Andersons.
already at 28, he's tied, I think with Gary Anderson, actually, for the fourth most field goal kicks made in the playoffs in NFL history, with
That's
32.
interesting. And he's going to kick for a while still.
And
I
I
mean,
mean, he's I
that's.
think he's 19 or 20 behind Vinatieri. Like, he could catch Vinatieri in
Yeah.
playoff kicks.
Yeah.
Like, he's already moved ahead in terms of 50 yards. Like, you really see the progression of like how much better kickers have gotten over the years, that even
True.
in the 20 years since Adam Vinatieri was young, like 50 yard, like even the best kickers by 50 yarders were not, you guys did not line up for 57 yarders. Forget making them. Like, there's a reason why that was the longest one in NFL history. They didn't even try that. So there is this slow progression of kickers getting better. But even with that, he's at 32 kicks made, fourth most in NFL history at 28. So yeah, I think Harrison Butker is going to get there. I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer when all is said and done.
I agree.
And then, it's obviously too early to say for, some of these other guys. I don't, I think, I suppose Rashee Rice could get there. I mean, he was a rookie and already
Sure.
set a postseason record for completions, or catches made by a rookie receiver.
Another Jamar
Beyond
Chase
that.
L that he took this postseason.
Yeah.
Because Jamar Chase had that record.
Yes. Yeah. He still has the yards one. That's fine. You can keep that.
Yeah.
We'll take the ring. But,
Yeah.
maybe one day we'll look back at that. I don't. Let me think of, is there, anyone else
Yeah, I mean,
on the defensive side? I suppose there's a world where George Karlaftis turns into a Hall of Famer. I mean, this is kind of early for some of these guys.
sure, they would have to rip off. I mean, you kind of do get to the point where, like, if the Chiefs go on the most historic run of all time, if they do rip off four out of the next five or something like that, then pretty much everyone on this roster would have a pretty good case. They would all be sitting there with a ton of rings
Well, you
and
look at, I mean,
look at
Joe Tooney. I mean, well, Joe
sure.
Tooney could,
Oh,
he's got
100%.
four rings, right? He's
Yeah, he
got four
does.
rings,
He's the
and
only active player.
Look at
With four, I think.
the Denver Broncos, the last team before the Patriots to go back to back. I mean, they're still putting guys that carried John Elway's bum ass to back to back titles in the Hall of Fame. They're like, well, if these idiots got John Elway two Super Bowl rings, they must be Hall
They
of
must be
Famers.
really good. Yeah.
And they're still putting guys in, from those teams in the Hall of Fame 25 years later because they're like, oh, yeah. I mean, that Broncos team won back-to-back Super Bowls. They must have been pretty good. So
That's
let's
like
put
the
these guys
entry.
on. I mean, you know,
Yeah,
guys,
the password to the Hall of
you
Fame is just I won back-to-back Super Bowls
know,
and they let you in.
Justin Reed is 26 years old. You know, like he's
Sure.
got, I mean, he could end up being, you know, like a 3 or 4 time Super Bowl champion. It's all in front of us.
It's kind of
It
crazy in the sense of you think about the guys who won two now. Like the Chiefs won, Tyreek Hill won
is.
one Super Bowl in 4 seasons with Patrick Mahomes.
Completely
All right.
crazy.
Tyrann Mathieu, we were so thrilled. And, we won one in 3 years with him.
Yep.
And, his replacement, Justin Reed, is 2-2.
MVS is two for two.
And MVS is 2-for-2. Mecole Hardman's got his third ring.
Yeah.
And it's Mr. And apparently showing up at the NBA All-Star game wearing a Mr. Walk-off jersey. Like,
Yep.
well, they'll put him in one day. I don't. Anything is possible. Like you said, they keep this up. It's sort of ridiculous that they do that for teams like the Broncos. But look, now I am very much a pro. Yes, if a guy wins back-to-back championships, put him in the Hall of Fame. I can get behind that sentiment now because that's my team.
Well, Ranny, one thing we can all say is we all have three rings, which has been absolutely thrilling. Thank you so much for coming on with us throughout this amazing, historic, hilarious run. And I know we'll catch up with you before too long. You know, as soon as the Chiefs finalize that Justin Jefferson trade, we will have you back on here to discuss it in full. But in the
I will be here for that. Absolutely.
But in the meantime, we can all go to bed at night remembering that it is always sunny in Chiefs Kingdom.